There's that saying in leadership, healthy things grow, but cancer grows, and that's not very healthy. Mm. And so I think sometimes we have to maybe make sure that we're dissecting what it is that we're doing to make sure that it's the right thing.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Welcome, everybody. It's so good to be with you. And I want to ask you a favor before we get the conversation started today. If you enjoy our podcast, please rate and review us. That helps us get the word out to more and more people. It also helps us bring on more incredible guests like the one we have today. We've got Stephen Brewster with me, and Stephen is the founder of The Harmony Group, which is a company that comes alongside Christian bands and helps them reach a broader audience. Stephen is working with bands like Elevation Worship, Red Rocks Worship, River Valley Worship, and yes, even Engedi Worship. Stephen has years of experience in the music industry, but he also has served in executive level roles in some of our country's leading churches. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's so good to be here today. I'm so excited to get to talk to you today.
Great to have you on. And it's funny, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but everybody that I know that knows you refers to you as Brewster. So I have we'll go back and forth. And I don't know what's going to come out at any given time.
Whatever feels right. Like, we'll just roll with it.
That sounds good. It was so good hanging out with you in Nashville, man. I just, we were down there to celebrate Engedi signing with Capitol, and man, it was awesome to hear your heart and the moment we were talking just to kind of about what drives you and your perspective, I just thought, man, it'd be fun to have a broader conversation and be able to share it with more people. So thanks for jumping in.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I loved our conversation that day. It's not often that you get to meet people that you go, oh, I would totally enjoy working with them and doing life with them. But with your team and with you, it's always felt that way. So totally a huge fan of what you guys are doing, what you're doing with the church and obviously in the worship space. So
cool.
Excited to chat today.
Yeah. Same. Well, I thought maybe you could start out by just giving me a little bit of your background. Where'd you grow up? And maybe even like, how did you come to a place of faith in Jesus? What's your whole spiritual backstory?
Yeah. So my parents were missionaries. I kind of grew up around the world, Haiti and Singapore, predominantly high school in Florida. When you grow up in church, you know, you're always in church. So like I had all of those experiences. And then I would say like early high school, end of ninth grade, beginning of 10th grade, like kind of found my own faith and my own relationship with the Lord. And just ever since then, I swore I would never go into the family business and be in ministry, and didn't have any intentions to do that. Ended up there. And well, I mean, we're all in ministry. If you're a believer, you're in ministry, but vocational ministry.
Yeah.
And so, all over the world, high school in Florida, went to a lot of colleges because no one told me not to, and I racked up all kinds of debt, and I'm on the creative team, so I couldn't make a commitment, and ended up in Nashville, and been here ever since.
So was high school then your first time really spending extended time in the States, like living in the States? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what was the transition like to go from being on the missions field to coming into Florida?
Yeah. I mean, so spent time in Haiti, a long time in Haiti, like moved there when I was in like kindergarten, moved out when I was in like seventh grade, but we moved from Haiti to Singapore. And so Haiti to Singapore was way more of a culture shock than Singapore to Florida. I had a different worldview because I grew up in a space where I was the minority. Mm-hmm. And when you grow up in a different world, in a different space, a different perspective, it just shapes you differently. So I don't know that like I paid enough attention as a high schooler to like the cultural differences. Mm-hmm. I just knew things were different. Yeah. And there was a lot more white people.
Was it hard to acclimate to living in the States at that point or not? Not really. Was it just an easy shift?
No, I mean, that's a great question. I think it was an easy shift to go from Singapore to the States.
Okay.
It was a very difficult shift to go from Haiti to Singapore. And so that was, you know, middle school sucks anyway. Mm-hmm. And so middle school, and then you move to another country and you know, you don't belong, you don't fit in. And you went from a world where even though your life was modest, it looked wealthy, to a place where your middle class life is poverty level compared to everyone else in the country.
No kidding.
And so it was an interesting, I mean, and in Haiti, we didn't have much, so it wasn't like we were balling, but, yeah. But you know, that was, I think that was probably the biggest thing that I noticed in that. I mean, that and the racial piece, mm-hmm. I just noticed those two things were like very different when we moved back to the States. So,
wow. So the real drivers when you're going from Haiti to Singapore, I mean, you're doing it at a difficult life season, and then the essentially the social economic stratification, yep, was really a tough pill. Did you end up learning language, like doing language acquisition in each country, or how did that work?
I did. In Haiti, I did, for sure. I could speak Creole well enough to interpret for teams when they would come to town. But
okay.
We were only in Singapore for a year, and I didn't even have take a class. But
okay.
In Singapore, English is as dominant or prominent as Mandarin. So it didn't feel foreign to be able to just speak English.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Well, that background makes your shift into the music industry all the more like fascinating to me. How did you ever end up doing what you're doing and like kind of taking steps towards music?
Yeah. So I fell in love with creativity very young. Like I remember always loving creating and being able to do anything in the arts. Mm-hmm. I also love sports. And so I didn't want to be in the band in high school because I wanted to play sports. And, but I loved music, like always had music playing, always. And when I got into college, I realized, oh, there's a business side to music. So mm-hmm. even though I'm not a musician or a performer, there's a place for me in that, in the music space. So fell in love with that in college. And then, I mean, back then I didn't know anything about like a Belmont or an MTSU or a Full Sail where you could go and learn the music business.
Right.
So my education on the music business was going to Barnes and Noble and reading every trade magazine I get my hands on to just try to figure out how it worked. Huh. And then I moved to Nashville, in 1996, dropped out of college my senior year, one semester to go. Really brilliant decision, you know. Like I said, had no one telling me, "Hey, this is dumb."
Yeah.
I did go back and get my degree in organizational leadership, but moved to Nashville, and God was very kind. He allowed me the chance to do music business because, you know, at 20 years old, you think you know everything, but you really don't know anything,
right?
And I thought I knew I read Vibe magazine, so I know everything about the music business, and it was a crash course, but it was kind of the Lord to allow me to crash course. A lot of people move here and never get the chance to do the thing that they came here for.
How'd you break in?
So interestingly, breaking in kind of happened in two different ways. So one, I was a temp employee for a distribution company, and they were going through a computer change. And so my job was to answer the phone after Christian bookstores had been on hold for over like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and ask the Christian bookstore if I could take down their name and number and have someone call them back. I got cussed out by more Christian bookstores than probably anyone in history, right? And quickly learned that I didn't have any desire to be in the distribution space.
Yeah.
You know, simultaneously, I met a guy named Toby Mack at a record store, and he said, "Hey, do you guys happen to play basketball?" And I was like, "Yeah, I play basketball." And he's like, "Cool, we're playing basketball tonight at like midnight at this gym. We need one more. Can you come play?" And I said, "Sure." And so I started playing basketball with him and a select group of people that he would call in to play, and kind of like that's how I built a relationship with him, then ended up getting to work at my first label job was at Goatee Records, yeah, and because of Toby. And
no,
it was
kidding.
Awesome.
So was he already kind of a legend by that point that you were playing ball with him, or was he still kind of on the up and up?
He was a DC Talk legend.
Okay.
So
yeah.
So like Jesus Freak had already been out. Supernatural was coming out. He hadn't gone off and done the solo thing yet, but DC Talk was massive, and so he was in that stage. And Toby's a legend; he's an icon. So,
yeah, somebody I was listening to an interview or something, and they said they were talking about him and just saying he has got the most incredible commitment to detail, to being great at what he does, just like full on 110 all the time. I mean, it was really cool. I think it might have been. I heard Tommy Prophet say that about him. I'm not sure who was talking
Very
about
possible.
Him.
Possible, yeah.
But that's kind of how attest, he is, huh?
I can attest. Those are true statements. But what's really amazing is even with him being the pinnacle, really, of our industry.
Yeah.
No entitlement, very humble, very easy to work with, not egotistical, competitive, very competitive. But so it was fun to learn. I really learned about the music business from Toby and Joey. Joey's the president of Goatee Records, and I've gotten the privilege to thank them over and over again for basically paying for my education and my mistakes in their company. Help me learn how to do what we do today. So,
man, that's really, really cool. It's so fun when you meet people who are driven, they're competitive, they want to get after it, but also just have that deep sense of humility, and they're not divas. They don't think they're anything special. And to have that combination, I mean, you can find one or the other, but finding both in the same person is a real privilege. What an awesome way to start. I know you ended up doing a season working for churches, but how long were you in the music industry before you went on staff at some churches?
So I worked in the music business for probably 10 years. And then, about 10 years, and then left the music business to come work in church. And so had a couple stints where we were like bivocational or like volunteer, like ministry leads, but vocationally it was about 10 years.
Okay. Gotcha. And I think all the churches that you did staff work for were all larger churches. I'd be curious. I mean, just larger churches are their own kind of beast in and of themselves. Did you have any, did you walk away from those? Cause you've been in different places. See, I have one long run in one church and then a short run in another church. And that's it. Like, I don't have all these years of and places of reference. But did you end up from having a perspective at different churches, learning anything about, oh, man, there's some threads here that are helping these churches do what they do well and reach people? Or is it like, no, each one was kind of its way different, you know, beast and such?
I think both, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that makes a church great is when it is unique, right? When a church offers their community something that all the other churches are not offering them, that becomes attractive to the people that resonate with that style of ministry or that felt need. The commonality of successful churches, you know, strong kids student ministry, usually a strong communicator. Back then, and I don't think it's as much now, but back then, like really quality small group programs of being able to provide community for people.
Mm-hmm.
Of the churches that were good to work at that did that, they also had really healthy cultures. Okay. And so the leadership team cared about ministering to their staff before they cared about ministering to their community. And those are all, it gets very rich when you do that, because you there's so much more retention, you mm-hmm. know, and there's nothing long, the most sexy thing in the world is longevity. And so when you can keep a team together and have fewer transitions, as long as everybody's like performing well, then it can be really special. So, it's interesting because you can have a very successful church and it be very unhealthy. And, there's that saying in leadership, healthy things grow, but cancer grows, and that's not very healthy. Mm. And so I think sometimes we have to maybe make sure that we're dissecting what it is that we're doing to make sure that it's the right thing.
Well, that's a great, great point. Let's talk about the culture thing a little bit. So I know you said they cared about their staff kind of first. What did that look like practically for you guys? How did you see that lived out in the church context? Yeah. How are they building the staff? How are they building healthy culture as a whole? Or would you say healthy culture is just building into a healthy staff and then it kind of takes care of itself?
Yeah. I mean, I think a healthy culture is intentional, right? So really anything about culture, you either curate culture or you permission culture. Mm. And if you permission culture, it's usually a bad culture. So you're allowing things to happen that, and that's not just a church thing. That's just any organization. If you allow poor behavior, that's the culture that's going to be built. If you're intentional with your culture and you know what your values are, you know what your purpose and mission is, and you keep everyone focused on that, that becomes healthy. And so I do think in church too, I have such respect for church planters. I think planting a church is one of the most difficult things in the world. Like, because you're just out there on your own. You never have enough money. You never have enough time. You never have enough resource. And you are just grinding it out, right? And then God starts to like move, and all of a sudden you start to get some staff, and you start to get some buildings or tools, resources, whatever it is. And then the pastor's still in that we got to keep grinding mode, because we're never like, this is going to fail. Like, we can't let it fail. Even when the organization has matured to a place where it's no longer fragile, some of that thinking still exists. And a lot of times, you know, you can tell a church is probably in trouble, culturally in trouble, when one person has five jobs and there's no respect or intentionality around Sabbath, where people don't feel like they have fun when they're working, right? Like, we're doing ministry. Ministry's hard. There's a spiritual warfare component to it. And then all of that plus everyone's a jerk. Like, why do I want to be in that world, you know?
Right.
So caretaking your staff is making sure that they're getting counseling when they need it, making sure that they're checked on, paying them or bonusing them as well as you can, maybe even put to a place that it might hurt, and then just making sure you're like stewarding these people. You know, I remember slightly unrelated, but pretty related. I was at an event out in at Saddleback years ago when I was in ministry full time, and Pastor Rick Warren walked in, and there was like 10 of us in this room, and then he walks in and he sits down in a chair and just starts talking, and it is literally like a master class in ministry. Like, I couldn't write notes fast enough.
No kidding.
And one of the things he said that I think was so important was, he said, in ministry, most leaders in ministry want, when someone comes and joins their staff or their team or their relational circle, they think that that person's a lifer, right? And the reality is more people are called through Saddleback than are called to Saddleback. And our job as leaders is to make sure that we don't overprotect our emotions so that we still give ourselves to the people that we're responsible for. And that while they're there and while we have them, we give them the very best that we can give them. And that totally changed how I looked at like staff culture. Was like, oh, most of these people are going to not be here forever. A very small handful will, but while we have them, we better make sure we give them everything we got.
Yeah, boy, that's really good. Yeah, it's a really unselfish, sort of servant-hearted paradigm to take on, to say, I mean, obviously they're there for a role on the team, and, and that's important, but to say, how can we send them out some point just stronger, better, healthier than when they came in, and it's not just about like what they're bringing to the organization. I love that.
And trusting the Lord that if he's moving them on, he's got somebody better.
Yeah.
Coming in, you know, so.
It's interesting with the whole, like you're saying, the on the one hand, the startup mentality of like the gritty, we're hanging on by our fingernails, like you need to, on the one hand, you need to grow out of that. But it's funny because there's a lot of talk too about keeping that founder's mentality and like having that entrepreneurial, because the flip side is sometimes people get very organizational, they get very comfortable. Yes. Things are working, and now we're afraid to take risks and all that. Whereas when you're small and nimble, you're like trying stuff and going everything for it and all that. So how do you navigate that tension, do you think, between not overly embracing like a startup mentality, but at the same time retaining some of the strengths that come with it?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in hustle, not the hustle that John Mark Comer writes about, like where that's unhealthy. To me, hustle is making sure you bring everything you got to whatever you're doing. And so I think that a lot of people look at the equation the way you just described it, the startup mentality or the like the gritty and then startup mentality. And actually there's three different lanes. There's we have this business and we're running it out of our garage. That's a church plant, right? Like that's actually the most gritty. You're running out of your garage. You're not even a startup yet. You're like on life support, hoping that we make it, right?
Yeah.
Then there is the startup stage. And the startup stage is where you keep the mentality, but you understand that you're not fragile. You're not so fragile that you can't make mistakes. You're not so fragile that you can't give people time to catch their breath. Like that, and really it's honestly a trusting in the Lord that if we bring everything we've got, he's going to do the rest, right? Then the next stage is the one that gets super dangerous. And that's like the corporate mentality where everything has a policy, everything has a procedure, everything has a handbook. And you really like just obliterate creativity and innovation out of your organization because it's so structured.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And there are great churches that live in that space. It's just, those are for a different kind of person than maybe what I would want to work in, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So I think preserving and fighting for the startup space is vital.
Mm-hmm.
Just always remembering, okay, we're not so fragile anymore that we can't breathe.
Yeah. Makes sense. So with how many years were you doing church work before you then started your company?
Yeah, probably cumulatively about another 10.
Okay, that's a good run.
Yeah.
Tell me about the journey to starting to think about and then ultimately launch the Harmony Group.
I wish there was a think about. So I had gone through a really tough season. We worked at a church. It was our favorite job. Like our team was incredible. We loved them. I thought it was our forever. I thought I was called to it, not through it. Mm-hmm. And God had different plans. I was called through it. And so terrible season in 2016. Ended up going to another church in Florida for 5 months. Went to the pastor and just said, hey, look, I'm not healthy. I need to go someplace smaller and start to get healthy and get in counseling. And I haven't recovered from this past season. So moved to Charlotte. I worked at a church that's not Elevation. Yes, there are churches in Charlotte that are Elevation. And was there for about a year, got in counseling, started getting healthy, got invited to be on the executive team, started asking questions you would ask on an executive team and got fired. And, the genesis of the Harmony Group was I need a job. And so, I had felt like the Lord was telling us our next season of ministry was going to look different. And I didn't know what that meant. I really, really thought it was going to be leadership, creative, and like church consulting.
Mm-hmm.
I texted one of my friends and said, hey, you guys probably don't need any help with your music at all. But if you did, I'm in a season where I might be able to help you guys a little bit. And he wrote back and said, hey, we've been wanting to hire you for 4 years, but you've always had a job.
Huh.
And I was like, conveniently, I don't. So I started working with them, and that was like about a third of my time and compensation.
Okay.
Another guy had asked me to. He owns a church consulting company, and they're very successful, and I love them. And he's like, "Hey, I've just been impressed with you. Why don't you come and be part of what we're doing here?" And I was like, "Love it." So I went through all the training, Pastor Brian. I went through everything. 2 weeks from starting, I'm in the car driving to the airport to go visit a university to pitch some curriculum. And I get a phone call from this guy. He's the owner and president. He's like, hey, God told me I can't hire you. And I was like, he did not tell me this. Like, this has been a secret that he's kept from me. But I really felt like I really believed him. Like, I there was a piece in it. I was scared to death, but there was a piece in it. Because it's 2/3 of our salary. We're starting in 2 weeks. We're about to move back to Nashville. Like, all of these things. And he was so kind. He was like, listen, I will pay you until you find something else.
Wow.
And I just said, you know what? I love, thank you. That is so kind. But if God really told you that you're not supposed to hire me, I can't take your money. Like, I need to go. We both need to live on the faith that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And he reluctantly agreed. And so, so I didn't know what was next. Honestly, I get on the airplane. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, what's interesting. And I know you were saying it's, you wish there was a story in the whole getting fired thing. I remember coming across a book once that said the title was something like Why Getting Fired is the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. And yes. It was the story of all of these incredible leaders, founders, all these different folks that you would never imagine would get fired. But it was the very act of getting fired that led them actually into the great thing that they ended up doing. And so just for anyone who's listening right now, you know, if you're in the place that Brewster was at one point and you're thinking, oh my goodness, how could I be that guy or that gal who just got fired? There are many folks, and you're going to hear what Brewster's doing today, that ended up actually paving the way to a really cool thing and just started out maybe less than the way that we would plan for. So anyway, keep going. You're saying getting in a plane, I think you were saying?
Well, yeah, I'll go there in a second.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about getting fired if it happens once or twice. If you're a serial getting fired person, you probably need to do some self-evaluation. But so I get on this airplane and I text my wife and I'm like, "Hey, this company isn't going to hire us. Like, he just called me and told me that God told him he can't." And she was like, "I didn't have a piece about it. I think we're going to be fine." And I'm freaking out, like, want to jump out of the airplane while I'm flying, land in Tampa, drive over to Lakeland, go to Southeastern University, pitch this curriculum. Because there's no university currently still where you can go and get a degree in being a creative arts pastor. Mm. And I had all this curriculum. I had been coaching creative pastors all over the country. They were like, we love this. Let's do it. Let's build a curriculum. Let's build a track and a lane. We've never done any of that. But they also said, hey, our worship team's upstairs meeting with a record label. Would you mind sitting in that? We know your background is in that. Would you mind sitting in just listening? So I go up and listen. After the meeting, I was like, hey, you guys probably shouldn't sign this because I don't think this is the right thing for you. And they were like, well, you can't leave today unless you're going to work with us and help us. And literally the same day that I was told that the one organization couldn't hire me, this other organization said, we need you. Mm. We're gonna contract you to do this. And that was really how it started. I still was, you know, when you're a beginner in business and you are like opening your own shop, you do all kinds of crazy stuff. Like, I was doing marketing for Football Sunday and I was doing like all kinds of crazy stuff. But as I started to get my legs underneath me, I realized that I had a unique space. There's no one else in the music business that I know of currently that has an executive background in the church and an executive background in ministry. Mm-hmm. And even through the bumps and trials.
Did you mean to say in ministry or did you mean to say in music?
Sorry, in music. Sorry,
yeah.
In music.
Yeah. So you got the both and.
Both and. And that's a blue ocean for us, for sure. So yeah, it was like the opportunity was there. And even through the bumps and the trials that we went through, I never lost a love or a hope for the local church. Like, I believe in it more than ever. There's a lot of weeks that I miss being on a church staff, mm-hmm. but I also know this is where the Lord has us, and we get to help a lot of teams now, so which is awesome. If there was one strategic thing that we did, and I don't even know if it's really strategic, but I just knew I was supposed to work with churches and ministries, like worship leaders,
mm-hmm.
not just like artists. And so that's kind of the filter for us. And if we're going to work with somebody, it has to have a worship component to it, or else there's somebody that's better than us to do that.
And maybe you could explain for those listening, like, what exactly does the Harmony Group do? I mean, when you say you're coming alongside worship teams and whatnot, what are you guys helping them with?
Yep. So great question. There's really three divisions of our company now. There was one big hodgepodge before, but now that we're kind of figuring out life, we have three different divisions. So one is management. So these are, this is what, when we work with a ministry that has a record deal, and we're going to step in and do what typically a manager would do in that relationship. And most of them are churches. So like it's a normal music manager isn't going to necessarily know how to navigate a church. Mm-hmm. And so we're managing there. And a handful of our clients live in that one very small space. The middle space is a church is releasing music and they are committed to it, but they just know they don't know what they don't know. And so we come in and we call these partners. So on the partner level, we're going to meet with you every 2 weeks and we're going to become part of your team. We're terrible consultants, but we're pretty good teammates. And so we're going to come in and we're going to basically do everything for you or through you. So we're going to give you the strategy. We're going to give you the systems. We're going to give you the institutional knowledge. We're going to help you with distribution. We're going to help you as you grow, get a distribution deal, maybe if that's what the Lord would have, or a pub admin deal. But really we're involved in every aspect of the music. So from publishing to creation, to writing, to producing, releasing, marketing, we do all of that with the partner churches. Then there's a handful of churches that we found, and we started this about a year ago. We found there was a handful of churches that weren't ready to become partners yet. Like it would be unfair of us to take their money, because they just hadn't matured in what they were doing enough to warrant needing that level of investment. And so we started a coaching division. And so on our coaching division, we meet with churches once a month and on Zoom and just give them the knowledge, but we're not doing any of the lifting.
Okay.
They're still doing all the lifting. We're just giving them knowledge, best practices, and helping them prepare. In a perfect world, it moves from coaching to partner to management, because you've kind of grown in your mm-hmm. ministry. Not every team's going to do that. Most probably won't. But when it happens, it's pretty special.
That's really cool. Well, I'd be curious, when you think about what gives you the most joy about what you do, I mean, is it seeing teams move through the pipeline in the way that you just described? I mean, what for you is the most satisfying part of your role and what you do at your company?
Yeah, the most satisfying role is by far the relationships with the teams. The music's great, right? It's awesome. And I love, like, when we have a song that's successful, like that's fun, right? But that's very fleeting. One of the things that I love about what God's allowed us to be a part of is the fact that pretty much all the teams we work with, there are people. Not all of them, but most of them, there are people. And so if they're in town, we're hanging out with them mm-hmm. when they're coming over for dinner. And we just build these relationships with these teams. And some, you know, church is transient. So sometimes people come, sometimes people go, but the relationships are what's really, really special.
Yeah. You're like the Jerry Maguire of Christian worship music, huh?
I mean, maybe.
Yeah. I'd be curious. I was thinking about this with regard to teamwork and just thinking about aspects of what you do and what you see that could apply to somebody who's outside the music industry. And I think sometimes when you think about like, what's a band do, you just imagine a bunch of people sitting in a room, just being super creative, don't have any sense of what is on the calendar or the schedule, you know, that's just, but the reality is, of course, for a band to really go where it needs to go, they need to function as a team. They need to have clarity on their goals. I guess I'm curious if there's anything you've seen in bands that really make a bigger difference, that from a teamwork or a leadership perspective, you go, there are some principles there that apply to other areas of life besides like a band.
Yeah. So one of the biggest ones is every successful band or artist ministry, there typically is two people, two different types of people that are in that group, right? One is going to be the person who's probably the hardest driver. Like they're committed to the process, to the execution, to the get it done, right? Most of the time, that person is also not the most creative person on the team, right? And having the balance of the person who can sit in a room and not care about the strategy, you need that. Like you need seasons of that where you're just so engrossed in creativity that you're not worried about the other things. But successful artists can't always live in that space. We were talking about Toby earlier. One of the most creative guys I've ever met, but also one of the hardest workers and most driven people I've ever met. And so successful teams, whether it's music or not music, they're going to have an operations side that knows how to drive the mission of the organization forward. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to have a creative side that allows them to bring in innovation, ideation, fun sometimes, you know, and you've got to have both gears. If you don't have both gears, anytime you over-index one way or the other, it impedes your ability to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So great teams have both.
Yeah, makes sense. Do you see that when, as far as like a point leader per se in any given time, does it depend on the team on if it's like, oh, the more creative person's really driving, or is it generally the strategy person that is kind of the point person in most cases?
Well, in most cases, it can be both, and it is okay. Both. A lot of times when it's the organizational driver person, there's still a lot of elements of creativity in them. There's also a little bit of jealousy that the other person just gets to be creative. and it's probably a bit of a self-awareness gap of like, hey, this is the thing that God's uniquely designed me to do, mm-hmm. that person can't do. Like the total artist, they are not able to function very long in the organizational strategical space, because it just drains them. And so a lot of times that person that's driving is jealous of the person who's not driving. And one of the things that we try to do is really reinforce that the personality type that God gave them is intentional so that they can steward the thing that he gave them as well.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Cause I think a lot of times it feels like if we're oblivious either to our own wiring or to our team's wiring, then we're wondering why isn't this person doing this or that? Cause right. you have your, it's the whole fish in the fishbowl thing. I mean, you see the world a certain way with your wiring on the way things ought to operate, what needs to get done and all that. And then if you're not aware, that's just how you are gifted to see the world. You're wondering what is wrong with the rest of these people. I mean, my goodness. And
why are they all flakes?
Yeah. And so it's, so once you start to realize a little bit, oh, okay, well, this is just a different wired thing. And this is a thing I'm going to bring to the team. And that's one of my unique contributions. That's really, really helpful. I'm curious from a leadership standpoint, you know, you've gone from some big church staffs and honestly, you know, bigger companies to now you're a smaller team. And I think when we talked, do you have like maybe five people on your team, your staff team for, or is it more than that? I know that they're kind of spread out. So it's a little bit unique.
Yeah. So we have myself plus, three people.
Okay.
And so, and one of them is currently part-time. But yeah, so it's a smaller team than I was leading a lot bigger teams in the past. But you know, this as a founder, like hiring is so stressful and people think that hiring is the most expensive thing, but firing someone is the most expensive thing. And so just being meticulous and honestly, probably too afraid, like a lot of years that I probably had the resources to start bringing support around us, but so afraid that the money was going to dry up that I probably waited too long. I've definitely impeded my ability to scale because of that fear. And I think it's a good fear because I don't want to put somebody else's family in a position where I have to let them go. But I also think that it requires faith to do anything special in life. And so I'm wrestling through it, Pastor Brian. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great transparency. I don't think, you know, sometimes when people think about those who are in hiring positions, you don't think about what they feel in this, but I can remember like it was yesterday, the first time I hired somebody full time, and he was married. He had three kids, and we were a startup thing. And we had some reasons to be hopeful, but not like, oh, this is going to be it's easy sure street. Deal. And I thought, man, he is putting his whole family on the line to join me in this thing. It's a crazy, crazy feeling. And of course you're thinking, you know, even organizationally when you're small, every hire is just has disproportionate weight. I'm curious, how do you feel like, you know, I think that's a really interesting observation just relative to it. On the one hand, like retaining some of that discernment and caution with regard to hiring people, but also being aware where is fear or anxiety have too much of a hand in this and where do I need to just amp up my faith and kind of get after something. Are there other ways that you've had to grow as a leader for the Harmony Group? Because this is, I mean, you're the founder, you're the chief guy, you've run other things, you've been, you know, led departments, you've had teams, but this is a different role. Have you had to grow yourself in other ways? And if so, what would they be?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's enough podcast time for us to go through that whole list. I would say one that is true for me, and it's probably something I've always wrestled with a little bit because of my wiring, is delegating well. I've lived way too many seasons of my life where my identity was way too caught up in what I did and how other people perceived me. Mm-hmm. And so when you're the founder of an organization and initially people are hiring you for you, not for your service, like your services are part of it, but they're like, I'm hiring you to help us. Mm-hmm. And we're at that stage right now of like, you're not hiring me to help you. You're hiring us to help you. And that means that I'm going to do the things that only I can do well. And I'm going to let my team do the things that they can do well. And me being comfortable with that and being able to clarify that expectation with you as the partner that you're not going to have me on every phone call. I'll be there and I'm accessible, but these other people are great. And and we've been very intentional in who and how we've hired so that they could bring the best to it. So
was it hard
that
to
whole like letting go thing is tough.
Yeah. That was a big growth edge, is just being able to let go. And was there a lot of coaching up for the team, or did they come in for those who are working on your team? Were they already really good at what you needed them to be good at, and it was just setting them loose? Or was it like, no, you had to really walk with them closely to get them to the place where you could let them run?
Yeah. Well, and I think I'm still wrestling with that. So I don't know that it's been completely resolved, but, because what we're doing is kind of innovative there's not another organization that does what we do with churches. So no one's come in here going, I worked at your competitor and I know all of the systems. You put me in the seat, I'm going to drive. So the one thing that I've been blessed with, and I would love to say it was intentional. I would say it's partially intentional. Two of the three people that we've hired, we hired them after they left working for one of our partners. So they had been on the other side of our services. And so they're coming in knowing what that person on the other side is feeling and is experiencing, which is something I've never felt, even as the founder, I've never felt. And so everyone on our team has worked in church before. And if like, we can't make it a condition legally, but it's a high quality and high value of ours is that you've worked in a local church, because you've got to understand how church works if you're going to do this and do it well. So they've come from being associated with us to now being us. And so there's still a little learning curve. And honestly, I mean, we're only 6 years old, so there's a learning curve every day in what we're doing. Yeah. And the music business changes so fast that, just like a lot of other industries, tech and, but your job today and your job in a year is going to be very different no matter what, because the world's going to be different.
Are there any key things when you're bringing people on? I mean, obviously there's the technical expertise. There's the, hey, it'd be nice. Your radar's up for if they have church background. Are there any other things that you're like, man, these are big deals to me in the hiring process that no matter what the role is, I am just keeping my eye out for this or that in the candidate?
Yeah. One of them is I've got to like to hang out with you. Like, and that sounds weird, but I remember one of the greatest leadership lessons I learned from the Tina Fey memoir, which is not where I would typically go for leadership advice or practical leadership development.
A good book. Oh my goodness. We've loaned ours out to so many people. Yeah. You got to be ready for a little color if you're listening now. Okay. Yes. It is Tina Fey here. So, but it is fantastic. What's the leadership lesson that she taught you?
She was talking to Lauren Michaels and she was wrestling through a hire that she was trying to make. And she said, she was asking him for advice as her boss. And he said, make sure that you want to be with that person at 2 o'clock in the morning. Cause you're going to be with them at 2 o'clock in the morning doing this job. And you're going to want to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that just clicked of like, I get to choose if I'm going relationship's a big value to me. So I want to be able to kick it with the people that are part of our team.
Yeah.
And so if I don't have a vibe with you, it's not going to work. Like, it's not going to work. So that would be the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Trust. I mean, every organization moves at the speed of trust. So I've got to be able to trust you and trust that what you're telling me is true.
How do you assess that?
Usually by spending time with them. So I'm not a huge proponent of hiring somebody full-time right off the bat. I would rather contract you part-time, then contract you full-time, and then hire you. Because I want you to test me. Maybe you don't like working for me. Maybe I'm a maniac and you don't want to be part of this. But let's grow into it together when we have that luxury, you know. So yeah,
makes sense.
And I think for churches, like, you should always slowly bring someone on like that, like as much as you can.
Yeah.
So just in the interaction, a lot of questions, like, you know, when I've gotten to walk with you a little bit, I know if I can trust you or not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so that's, you know, trust is a big one.
Yeah. That makes sense. I'd be curious when you think about, I mean, 6 years in, are you a guy, some folks when they're leading their own organization, they're like, oh, in 20 years, I hope we're at XYZ place. And other folks are like, man, I'm looking ahead 1 year, just, or they just think, yeah, I just kind of want to keep doing what we're doing and hopefully it'll grow. How do you handle the whole vision of where we're going conversation in your own mind? Is that something you think about a lot, or is it, yeah, how do you do vision?
So if I answer that question honestly, for way too many years, fear drove that vision of like, am I going to be able to succeed? You know, I think we're in a place now where we're stable enough that I am looking forward. And I would have never in a million years, if you'd have told me 7 years ago, this is where I would be and this is what we'd be doing, I would have laughed at you. Like, there is no, I could have never dreamt that it would be what it is. And so some of that, I want to make sure I want to keep that wonder alive. Like, I don't want to put the box or the ground rules around what God can do, you know? I do have aspirations that we're able to have a few more people so we can help a few more churches. Right now, we're pretty close to capacity, and so bringing anything else in right now would probably hurt our team more than help our team. So I would like it to stay boutique, but be able to have the luxury of helping as many as we feel called to. One of the unique things about our organization is of all of the teams we worked with or have worked with or will, we've only sought out one of them. Everyone God has brought to us. Wow. And so for me, it's more of a stewardship thing. I want to make sure that I'm scaling to be able to steward what God brings us more than I'm dreaming to be like a power industry mogul or something silly like that. Cause it's Christian music, y'all. Okay. There's not that person.
So what I hear you saying is a big part of your vision for the future is really just how you scale to be able to continue doing what you're doing, but really just for more people, more organizations, and keep yourself healthy at the same time. Is that a big part of what you're thinking about right now?
Yeah. Yes. And like just staying alert, keeping my antenna up that like where is the innovation moment or the opportunity that God's bringing along that I need to be paying attention to. Like when I started this, I had no idea that we would end up having our own distribution relationship and publishing administration relationship. We do. And so just paying attention to those things, like, you know, following the path and the pace of peace and making sure that we're moving. We're not just staying stagnant.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing just by virtue of trying to move forward, how different ideas and opportunities open up. And like you were saying earlier with some of the divisions you guys have within your company right now, like the one that's really for you use different words, but mentoring one kind of the lowest level involvement. Well, that wasn't necessarily exactly on your radar at the beginning, but you started to realize, hey, there's a place here we can respond to a need and make a difference. And I'm sure those things will continue to come up. I'm curious, I've got two last questions. One's a sort of selfish one. So when you first encountered Getty Music, I'm curious what ultimately led to you saying, hey, it would be cool to have a relationship with these guys. Like you're used to working with some really big time bands and you guys have been such just advocates and amazing friends to our team. I'd just be curious. Yeah. Like tell me what was it that you thought, I could see this happening.
So that's a very interesting question because this is a very interesting relationship. And so I couldn't even pronounce Engedi at the beginning. And so every time Tucker and I would talk about it, I would say, what's up with Enigma? What are we doing with them again? And I remember meeting the guys on a Zoom call. And this is, we had been probably like going back and forth and maybe some texts and some emails for a while, quite a while. And when the music was cool, but I mean, there's a lot of cool music out there. But when we got on that Zoom call, I remember like getting off that call and being like, and really feeling like we're supposed to be in relationship with them. Like there's someone we're responsible to help steward. And that was it. Like literally at that moment, I was like, I'm going to learn their name and we're going to work together. And so, and I mean, obviously you guys make really cool music. Like, so that's the benefit. But also, and there's a favor on what you guys do. You guys have some relationships that people at the maturity level of of that part of your ministry don't have. And so, I think God probably brought us along to help you navigate that as much as for us just to be homies. So
yeah, it's cool. Well, thanks for saying that. We sure have appreciated your just investment in the team, and you guys have been so generous and so kind. And I have no doubt we would absolutely not be where we are right now had it not been from your coaching and input. And honestly, I feel like this is it's the front end, so we're really excited to see what God has in store for the future. Just kind of last question. I mean, the music industry, and you've referenced this a couple times, is there's always this crazy like what's going to happen next based on technology. Are there any kinds of trends or innovations that you're seeing right now, whether it be in the social media space or in the how music gets to people space or whatever, that you're going, hey, we're trying to pay attention to that for our bands?
Yeah. One for the positive is we've become social media managers in essence. Like we talk about it more than anything else that we talk about, because you can't be successful in music in this season of the musical history, without a very strong and aggressive social media strategy. Like people find music online, like that's where they're finding it. And radio does not have the same, influence that it's had before. It's still very valuable, still a lever to pull, but not the lever to pull anymore. And so for the first time, it's also exciting because for the first time, artists or ministries have the ability to curate and collect the people that are theirs. And there's no gatekeepers between you and them anymore. You can get on your phone and make it happen. And so that is an exciting thing. A scary thing is AI and just how people are using AI to create music and imitate other artists. And there's legislation that's getting put into place to help that as well. But innovation always leads before legislation can catch up. So.
Right, right. I haven't actually, and this is maybe this is a little bit naive of me here, but I haven't heard any music yet. I've read about music being generated by AI, but when you've heard, I'm guessing you've heard stuff. Is it like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is crazy that AI just came up with this?
There is a song, not a song, but a clip of a song on TikTok and Instagram right now that is Justin Bieber singing about a situation. And it is not him. It is completely AI. And most people believe it's Justin Bieber wrote a song about this situation. And it is completely fake.
No
kidding. Completely fake.
Wow.
So yeah, it's happening.
Yeah.
Now it's weird if you're a like AI person, you're like creating and Getty Worship's like dupe. Because worship music has so many components to it that spiritually a regular song just doesn't have.
You know what's been crazy? I'll ask AI I'll use ChatGPT and ask some different questions about, I'll ask just to get curiosity, like on some Bible passage or whatever. I have been shocked by how solid the answers are. And I just asked a textual question this week and all of the responses quoted, and I asked for the quotes of the speaker, all of them quoted heavy duty New Testament scholars that were all very evangelical in their perspective. And I'm like, dang, I mean, these are big names. I thought this is working for me right now. So it's just funny that the whole idea of like, you know, you've on the one hand, great tool, but on the other hand, we got to figure out how to use it wisely and safely.
Just like everything else.
Totally.
In history.
Yeah. So. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for telling us a little bit more about what you do. And I know that for those who are listening to our podcast, they've heard me talk about Getty Music, and we're going to have Jerrion on sometime soon and talk about the album that comes out in February, which is a really exciting thing for us. Already, the first single, we were comparing like the release for our first single of our last album to this one. And the traction difference is absolutely nuts difference. Yeah. So I thank you for your input and how that's helped contribute to the music getting out there. And it's cool. Like we're starting just a log of stories of what God is doing through the music. Cause you know, there's the numerical side and that's not unimportant, but I said to Jerrion, we got to make sure we hear people say this or that. We got to make sure we write this stuff down so that when people are saying, you know, oh, what's this all about? We can say, let me tell you what it's all about. And then talk about, he was just sharing a story with me of somebody who just lost their job and was sitting with Still Do Miracles, the track we just released. Mm-hmm. And they were just so encouraged. God is at work. God is still doing something. Yep. I have hope. This firing is not the end of me. The firing has not been the end of Stephen Brewster. I mean, you know, I can do this. Right. And so that's what's really fun about it. And getting those encouraging words out there to a broader audience is something we're excited about. So thanks for also your transparency when it comes to there's the outward journey or the kind of the hard skills journey of, oh, I've got to learn to delegate and I've got to get better and I've got to do this with a startup mode and all these different things. But then there's the internal side that you've referenced a couple times when it comes to things like battling fear and the sort of inside emotional health things. And I just really appreciate your transparency on that front as well, because I think a lot of leaders, it's easy to focus on the skill side of things and what I need to do and what I need to get better in. A friend of mine started a consulting agency around the inside of leadership for marketplace folks. And he said, I had to shift a little bit because it turns out marketplace folks didn't want to talk about the inside, you know, too much. I mean, it was a tough go for him. Yeah. And so I just appreciate you giving voice to that, because for those who are listening, the inner journey and facing some of those fears and anxieties and identity issues you talked about is a big deal when it comes to what drives us forward. So thank you for your transparency. Appreciate you being on today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me be part.
Yep. We'll talk soon. Well, I'm so glad Stephen Brewster could join us today. And I really think one of the most encouraging things he said is, in some ways, how getting fired is one of the best things that ever happened to him. The company he leads today would not exist had he not gotten let go for a job. And I just want to say to all of you, maybe it's not getting fired, maybe it's some other kind of setback or barrier facing. But I want to remind you of a passage from Romans 8:28. It's a famous one, and it's probably familiar to many of you. Romans 8, verse 28, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." And so just know, no matter what the difficulty that you might be going through is today, if you are in Christ, God is going to redeem that difficulty. I'm not saying God is the one who caused that difficulty. I don't know how all that works exactly, but what I can say is that God will redeem it. He will work through it, even if it feels like it's insurmountable. And so I want to ask you before we leave today, again, if you could rate, review, Made to Advance, that would be a great help. This has been a production of Engedi Church, and we've got more incredible conversations on the way. So until next time, know you were made to advance.